Well, good morning. That's a little taste of the kind of thing you're going to be hearing for the next five days. Right here in KBOO, we're going to be blasting the fabulous Waterfront Blues Festival at you. And it's going to be just awesome. Why bake yourself in the sun if you tend to go into lobster mode like me? You could just kick back anywhere you might choose to be by your radio and listen to the Waterfront Blues Festival in its entirety right here on the Boo, baby. So I'm looking forward to that, as I do every year. It's a fabulous time of the year to get blue. And today we're going to get red, white, and blue here on Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Melody Silverwolf coming at you, and eventually Ani Haynes will be joining us in just a moment, actually. I understand she has just entered the building. So today we're going to be talking about the 4th of July, otherwise known in my circle as Codependence Day. What can I say? You know, it seems to fit. In fact, I've had several Codependence Day parties, which, you know, where we celebrated being codependent. It's very fun. Ate lots of food, drank lots of, you know, whatever. Anyway, today we are going to talk about this. You know, what can I say? It seems like patriotism is becoming a growth industry among some parts of our country. And if you don't wave the flag and proclaim yourself to be a patriot, then, you know, you're a traitor and should go live in Russia or China or somewhere like that, according to some people. And things are getting pretty scary out there. So we're going to talk about all that today, and we're going to welcome you into the conversation, because I think, you know, personally, I have a lot of venting to do on the subject. But at any rate, before we get into that, I do have a couple of announcements. Announcement number one is that on Monday night at 8 o'clock at Lola's Room, which is in the Crystal Ballroom, that's downtown on Burnside, you know, right there by the 405. Can't miss it. There's going to be a fabulous benefit concert for the Citizens for Safer Portland Initiative, which many of you have probably signed this petition. If you live in Portland, it's an initiative for the Portland ballot to make adult marijuana use of all kinds the lowest priority for the Portland police. And we are very close to getting enough signatures to be on the ballot. We're turning in the signatures a week from today. And we almost are there, but we're still collecting signatures. And we also need to raise some extra money. All this is expensive. And so come to Lola's Room, 8 o'clock on Monday night. You can hear State of Jefferson and another band, which I have, sadly, the name has escaped me. But, you know, it's going to be a great time for a great cause. Come on down and support your local marijuana initiative at Lola's Room Monday at 8. Okay, that's one announcement. And then here's another announcement. On the 4th of July, starting at 1 at Pioneer Courthouse Square, there's going to be the first annual OTB Freedom Rally. And an individual is going to be espousing his views about the U.S. Constitution, and invites everyone to join him in this behavior. So come on down, you know, bring your views, bring your bring yourself, and go to Pioneer Courthouse Square on the 4th at 1, and, you know, protect the Constitution with free speech. That's what it's all about. Okay, so those are the announcements, and so it's time to talk about the 4th of July, folks. You know, I really have a problem with the 4th of July for a lot of reasons. Not the fact that we celebrate the holiday, which is a worthy holiday to support. Obviously, it's, you know, commemorates the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It's all great and wonderful, la, la, la. You know, we're a separate nation. Wave the flag, do, 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 et cetera. You know, that's great. But over these centuries that we have been happening in this country, you know, celebrating the 4th of July has gone from a, you know, an event that people could really get behind for all the right reasons to, as many, you know, systems and institutions do in human endeavor, it's kind of become a, well, if you don't celebrate it the way I think you should, then you are a fill-in-the-blank, a traitor, a communist, a liberal, that's L-I-B-R-U-L, you know, or any of those other really rude, you know, more rude names that people get called, which some of which you can't even say on the air. So, you know, every year I feel really conflicted. You know, you see all these flags everywhere and people are marching and they're blah, 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 you know, and we're going to be having all these parades all around the country, marching and waving the flag while, you know, across the globe, you know, people are dying in Iraq, in our name, both our soldiers, other people's soldiers, civilians, little innocent children, men and women, of all colors and races are, you know, are killing themselves over there, trying to do their job in some cases and just trying to stay alive as humans in others. We are, you know, we are rapidly declining as a nation in the views of the eyes of the rest of the world due to George W. Bush and his behavior as our resident and the rest of his crime family, who are by no means innocent in this. He's not the only villain here. Obviously, there's quite a few others. And, you know, basically the whole country is going to hell in a handbasket. The economy is in the toilet. People have record amounts of debt, record low amounts of savings, record unemployment, you know, record applications to for help to food banks all around the country. Some people are doing better now that the economy has recovered from its additional, oh, my God, George W. Bush is in the White House panic attack. There are some people who have, you know, bounced back or working again. Their jobs have become more hours or more stable or their investments are returning better, et cetera. But there's a heck of a lot of us out here who are suffering. And not just financially, but we are being accused on a regular basis. If you are not a Republican, then I've heard several people on the Shouting Heads channels and on right-wing blogs say that if you aren't a Republican, then you're a traitor. If you're a liberal, L-I-B-R-U-L, then you're a traitor. Then you support Osama bin Laden. You know, if you aren't 100% behind George, if you think that there should not be a flag burning amendment, then you're a traitor. You're a communist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in the meantime, while we're all trying to wave the flag here with the non-flammable flag, apparently, because I don't know if you've ever tried to burn a flag, but, you know, if you don't have a real whole huge lot of money to buy really top-of-the-line flags, then you get these things that melt because they're made of nylon. They're very difficult to burn, actually. Good luck. The one time that I witnessed someone trying to burn a flag, it was impossible. It just sort of shriveled up, sort of like the Wicked Witch of the West in The Wizard of Oz. But anyway, that I digress. So while this is all going on, you know, we have the parades and the flag waving and the declarations by Orrin Hatch that preventing the burning of flags is the most important subject for the Congress and the Senate to be discussing at this time. I mean, please, please. The whole time we have people being killed in Iraq willy-nilly. I was very gratified to hear that Governor Kulongoski is returning early from a trip to Asia to go to attend the funeral of that poor young man who's from Madras who was killed in Iraq, the soldier whose name I regrettably can't recall. And I thought, well, that's a refreshing change that, you know, our governor goes to the funerals of the young men and women who are killed from Oregon in Iraq. But, you know, George W. Bush can't be bothered. So, you know, at the same time that we have all that going on, all this, you know, flag waving and jingoism from the White House and the White House's cronies, you know, at the same time, we have all this other really, really sinister things going on, really creepy. Like, here's an example. A young woman in Springfield, Missouri, actually she's a girl, she's 10 years old, was shopping at the mall with her mother a couple weeks ago, and she was wearing a bandana, which is, you know, fashionable in some circles, and she was approached by mall security, and she was told that she had to leave the mall if she would not remove her bandana. That she was told by the security guard that her bandana was violated the mall's policy of not allowing offensive clothing in the mall, okay? That they reserve the right to ask anyone to leave the mall or remove offensive clothing, okay? Now, what was this girl's bandana, you know, doing that was offending them? Well, gosh, let's see. It was a bandana that she'd bought at the mall. How about that? The very same mall where she was shopping, she had purchased that bandana, and it had a print on it of happy faces and flowers and peace signs. And because she was wearing a bandana with happy faces, flowers, and peace signs, she's 10 years old, mind you, she was asked to leave or remove the bandana. Now, I don't know about you, but that's just, like, seriously screwed up, okay? Like, I'm sorry, that is not the land of the free and the home of the brave when you can't wear a bandana with a peace sign and a happy face and a flower on it to go shopping and you're told that you're offending people. No, sorry. But here's another really scary story. I really wish sometimes that this was television so you could see these pictures. I just, a friend of mine on the internet, I'm very active in an internet forum and I've been doing that for a decade now. I'm very close to many of these people, although I've never laid eyes on them. One of my friends who hails from Memphis, Tennessee, brought this to our attention. This is really frightening, okay? It's in front of a large mega church in Memphis, Tennessee, and he was helping his niece learn to drive the other day. And she almost got in a wreck when he shouted in amazement as they came around the corner and saw this monstrosity, this violation of, I'm speechless. Okay, it's a 70, they have a big electronic reader board out on the road, and next to it, they have this statue that's waiting to be fully unveiled on the 4th of July, but you can see much of it now. It's a replica of the Statue of Liberty, 72 feet tall. But instead of holding the torch of liberty aloft, she's holding a crucifix. And on the book that she's holding, instead of reading, "Give me, you're tired, you're poor, etc., it has numbers which represent the Ten Commandments. And blazoned across her forehead, just underneath her tiara or whatever you want to call it, it says, Jehovah. Now, you know, I guess I have a real serious problem with this.
And morning, Melody.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm not the only one. I'm almost done ranting about this.
Well, no. No, why would you be the only one?
And I have this really, really serious problem with this. And, you know, I'm not the only one because, gosh, now this type is so tiny when you print the stuff out. There was an 11-year-old girl who lived in the town who they interviewed, and she said, "This just seems wrong to me that they shouldn't be mixing religion and the Statue of Liberty, that those should be kept separate."
It does. It seems very,
so
very
feel
wrong.
Free to
It goes right on into this commentary that I found, yes, on that vast, vast unit of wisdom, the Internet. We love the Internet.
Yes, we do.
We love its sort of self-publishing aspects because it's an interesting way to sort of go, wow.
The Internet is a very great blessing to activists in many ways.
Well, yeah. And it also is an interesting view into folks who just don't think like you.
That's right.
Because everyone organizes on the Internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. And it's not like it's,
I said activists
right,
in general,
right.
Yes, of both,
so it's,
all
it's,
stripes.
It's just interesting. So anyways, enough about that. But web commentary, which is a, I think that's the URL, webcommentary.com, is a site of apparently rather far Christian rightist sort of editorials. Democrats embrace flag burning, reject God is,
oh yes, because
the title of
those two automatically go together.
Yeah, there you go. I have to say, when held in a piece with what you've been talking about, and I must say, some horrifying, you know,
yes.
examples
I
of
she
freedom
loved the bandana
in
story.
America.
Or lack thereof.
Right. Well, there's another example that's just really frightening, and it's happening right now around us, and it's in Denver, actually.
Oh,
every year,
yes.
There is a rainbow gathering.
Yes, the rainbow family story.
Right. The rainbow family has been gathering now for, maybe I should have actually
story.
Checked.
A long time, 25 years?
I was going to say about 30 years. And at this time, there is, for the last many years, I'd say roughly 10 years, there's been a huge amount of local law of enforcement attention paid to the Rainbow Gathering, and not just local. Actually, sometimes there's some state, sometimes there's some federal, all because some folks want to have a free festival where we can commune, where we can truly, check out us as beings on the planet where we can actually have a little egalitarian village. It lasts for only about a week. It takes place...
Well, but the family's usually there for about a month.
Well, it all depends on what you call, because some people are there months beforehand scoping the site. It's at a national forest. Every year it rotates around the country. There are no permits. It is sort of folks asserting their right to assemble.
Which you can do on BLM land and such places.
Well, so one would imagine if we actually lived in the free country we thought we did.
Well, that's what the rules say anyway.
Well, yeah, sure. However, this has been really contentious. Let me make it clear, I've gone to one rainbow gathering. It was in 2000. 2001.
The one in Idaho, right?
It was Montana.
Montana, that's right.
Yep, but I was there. And I had always been both wanting to believe in the goodness of the rainbow family and a little bit skeptical, a little bit jaded around the edges.
Like any family, you know, they have their good elements and their not so good elements.
And what I realized when I actually had gone was that it was really one of the closest things I had found to an egalitarian society that I would love to live in as a village. It felt right. It felt wise in its conflict resolution and decision-making processes. It was what it was. And the idea that this is such a focus every year for enforcement. So right now what's going on is there are a U.S. Forest Service surrounded, or isn't surrounding, but is doing checkpoints.
They're preventing people from entering the land.
From entering, yeah. They're doing checkpoints on the one road that goes into the area of Colorado. There's a forest in Colorado, the Rote National Forest.
And preventing food and water from going into those who already are in place. So
exactly,
they're in big trouble.
And so there's like this standoff that's current, like now, because in fact the gathering is, traditionally starts right around the 1st. Of July. So this is happening. There is this standoff. There's the checkpoints, they've actually talked about pulling back checkpoints because they've been meeting with...
Well, they've been arresting people, too.
They have been arresting people.
For no reason at all, not just sort of like, you know, basically trying to get rid of them.
Yeah, in fact, let's see, as of about a week ago, about 80 people had been... Oh, gosh, turned away. 100 other people had just sort of... this is actually... I have an article about one specific incident. Maybe I should have printed out more because, in fact, the numbers of arrests and that sort of thing, it's been phenomenal this year. It's been really bad.
And there's no way they're going to be able... It's like trying to hold back the tide. All these people are going to be showing up, and what are they... You know, there's no way they can stop this now that it's started. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
The rainbow family is inexorable, like the weather.
Let me just go ahead and read a little bit of this. U.S. Forest Service officers drew shotguns, but then got into their vehicles and abandoned a checkpoint after about 200 people gathered and surrounded them.
Good for them.
She says a spokeswoman for the rainbow family relayed the incident to a couple of folks who are writers and organizers. Anyway, the police spokeswoman says that they're not going to compromise the safety of their officers, so they have been talking about actually pulling back the checkpoints because they're meeting with that kind of resistance. When you have 200 people sort of surrounding your checkpoint, it kind of makes you realize, really, even with weapons, you don't really have the power that the people have.
And it, you know, do they really think they can stop, like, what, 10, 15,000 hippies or how many people are going to show up there? It's going to be a lot of people.
Indeed.
I mean, it's just, you know.
15 to 20 is what they're expecting. 15 to 20,000 people. Not just hippies. I mean, you know.
No, you know what I mean.
If you want to, but, you know, people. So 60 to 80 people as of a week ago, like I said, this is a little old, had already begun approaching the site.
Well, and many of these people are experienced at being harassed by the authorities and know how to deal with that. You know what I mean?
Yes. Okay, so Anyway, that is going on, and I think it's important to actually not only stay on top of it, but call your congressfolk, you know, and talk to them about prioritizing.
Or better yet, call the Regional Forest Service Office, who is, you know, spearheading this law enforcement thing against the Rainbow Family. It's just, you know, don't they have anything better to do than waste our tax money on
this? It's part of a culture war.
Yes, it certainly is.
That's really the be-all and end-all of it. And that's the same thing with the offensive bandana on the 10-year-old with a happy face on a peace sign.
In Springfield, Missouri, for heaven's sake.
It's part of a culture war. And it's important to really see that for what it is, because, you know, when standing up for your right to speak through burning a flag becomes equated with rejecting God and being evil, let's just face facts. When you look at that with, you know, the statue of Jehovah, liberty,
entwinement,
when you look at that in terms of, I mean, how many more things do we need before we go, right, there's a pretty serious conflict. There's a serious culture war going on. How do we address that? How do we raise awareness of it? Because so far, you know, it's like either you're directly experiencing it or you don't believe it.
Well, and, you know, just the amount of money that it must have cost, I can only speculate how much it must have cost to erect this 72-foot-tall thing in front of this church. But, you know, Memphis, Tennessee has, you know, it has many social and, you know, economic needs that money could have gone towards. These so-called Christians, air quotes, who would spend that kind of money on such a tasteless and offensive, huge, in-your-face, neener-neener kind of a statue in front of their church, instead of using that money for a more Christian, may I say it, pursuit, you know, like helping the poor or some such. That's just really appalling.
Or some such.
Now, this is what my friend himself brought up. He said, you know, this is really, he's a Jew himself, but he said, you know, just imagine what they could have done with that money. And this is a mega church with 12,000 members. I mean, that's kind of, you know, really
what
offensive
can you do?
To me.
So it's about 4 minutes before 8 o'clock in
it
the
is.
Morning. You are listening to KBOO-FM, Portland. This is Ani. Melody's
sipping my mocha.
Having an inopportune moment of sipping. I timed that deliberately.
Yes, I know. That's okay. Karma will bite you in the behind eventually.
Well, what can you do? And we are here, Positively Revolting Talk Radio, looking at patriotism in this time of...
Jingoistic patriotism, I'd say.
Well, actually, that's what we've been talking about so far. But I want to also talk about a couple other things I want to bring into the conversation. First of all, how do we, because let's face facts, many of us will be gathering for little family picnics, for stuff.
For codependent day festivities.
How do we deal, you know, how do listeners and our community in general deal with using this opportunity to bring to mind perhaps some of the founding principles of the country, like the Declaration of Independence, that
like,
sort of thing.
Yes, like the fact that dissent is a true patriot's job. You know, that is our duty as a citizen to dissent and to point up things that we think are un-American in the classic sense of the word, in violation of the Constitution, of the covenant of the commons that we live under as a society.
Remember, in fact, all that time I was growing up under Reagan, the USSR was the big bad evil because they had political prisoners and they wouldn't let people talk against their government.
And they stole elections.
And they didn't value political dissent. And
they had the KGB that would come and shut you up if you said the wrong thing.
And that's why we had to nuke them.
Well, funny how that seems to describe our country now. How did that happen?
I don't know. So how do we talk about this as family? How do we talk about this and broaden the conversation? Because we need to be talking to folks that aren't like us. We need to be letting everyone know that, you know, your illusions are not going to keep you safe.
They're not.
So, no.
You mean sticking my head under the covers is not going to work, even if my butt's sticking out?
No. So that's sort of my big question for folks today. So good morning to you. Let me give the number out for folks that don't have it memorized. 503-231-8187.
And we love to hear from people we've never heard from before. Variety is the spice of life. So if you're chicken and you never called before, just brave up and give us a call.
And good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Annie. This is Steve from Salem.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. You know, I was doing some thinking about this flag, and according to the U.S. Code, the flag not only represents our nation, but it is in itself a living being.
What?
Now, Now I'm thinking about this, and you know, in the early Christian Church, and in fact, the first great persecutions were over whether somebody burned a pinch of incense to honor the Roman Empire, the state, or not. And Christians would die rather than put a little pinch of incense on this altar before the emperor's image. They said this is idolatry. And even the pagans tried to make excuses for the Christians and give them a way out, saying, well, have a servant throw the pinch of incense, or just go out of town and somebody will say that they've seen you do it. And they refused. They died rather than honor the image of the emperor as God. And I'm looking at this, and what is the definition of idolatry except to ascribe to an inanimate object spiritual life and authority?
Well, there's that. You know, when you said that the left flag was a living being, what popped into my head was the flag and Towley from South Park getting drafted and going to Iraq. I mean, I have a really twisted mind. What can I say, you know?
A little early for that, isn't
it? Picturing the flag and Towley as soldiers in Iraq, and that would be a very... I'm going to have to write to the South Park guys, see if they can come up with an episode like that. But, you know, I mean, if you've ever watched the character of Towley on South Park, you know, he's very two-dimensional, RRR. But, you know, I mean... What you're talking about harkens back to the time of the Inquisition, when objects were considered to be guilty of a person's crime of witchcraft, and therefore that's why they were able to be confiscated, which that's still the argument under law today, where if you commit a drug crime, say, and they can go to your house and take your car and your stereo and your whatever, because those objects are guilty under the law. That's the roots of it are very arcane in English law, but basically it's, yes, the objects are considered to be guilty of a crime, which is insane. They're things.
Well, that's the other idolatry that the American Christian writer involved with, and it goes back to the Reformation and Calvinism, that they hold, contrary to everything that you can see in the New Testament, that the sign of being one of God's elect is that he gives you wealth, he blesses you with an accumulation of wealth and influence in the world, and by influence they mean political power.
So that means that Rupert Murdoch is one of God's elect, huh?
Well, this is, there are things that Jesus said about you can't serve God and mammon. Mammon just means wealth.
Mm-hmm.
It means wealth deified. And this seems to be the definition of, you know, what they believe, this kind of idolatry. It says that they can't serve both. The same thing with, he said, you know, render unto God the things that are God's and the things that are Caesar's unto Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I see this literal idolatry of both these things. For instance, you know, there's a thing of, you know, who would Jesus bomb? And if it's not okay to kill for Christ, if it's not okay to use the sword to deliver even Jesus from, you know, being delivered over to death, what makes it okay to kill for Caesar?
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah, I don't see them. I don't see this really being asked on the Christian right. And when I bring it up among, you know, in my church and fellow Christians, they kind of, you know, dance around it. That's political, you know. But when there's Republican literature brought into the church, that's not political. That's a moral issue of dealing with abortion, these other things.
May I ask what denomination your church is?
Well, we're tied in with a group called North New Frontiers Fellowship. They're out of England. It's kind of a charismatic church.
Yeah, a lot of people who are attracted to the charismatic church. There's a whole panoply of free thinkers and kind of conservative folks all mixed together.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I used to know a charismatic Christian who was very progressive, and he had a hard time finding a church to go to because of that.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing. A lot of the people had come from gospel outreach, and what's interesting is that they had some churches in Latin America, both in, you know, in Guatemala and Nicaragua. And the one in Nicaragua, El Verbo Church, was doing a lot of work, you know, helping the poor people there in Managua, and it caught the attention of the Sandinistas. And the Sandinistas were so impressed with it that they actually gave them a ministry to continue their work. And, you know, the Sandinistas are presented as this, you know, ungodly, antichrist kind of thing. And here they are recognizing volunteer work for the value that it has. And, you know, talk about what do they call that, Faith's Initiative?
Or whatever right, right.
And here it is, the Sandinistas actually doing this. People from El Verbo Church had a good word for what they were doing down there because they had a heart for the poor.
Well, I think we're getting a little off the topic here, so I want to move on.
Saying is that there's that what seems to be happening in America is outright idolatry, where the flag as a living being is exalted over the right
absolutely.
Hand of the preacher and over the worship. I mean, it's right
and
there.
And it's problematic.
Yes, and poor people are not considered really, you know, if you're not rich, then you're not important, but things are more important than people. And that's really, that's very, very antithetical to almost any world mainstream religious view, that people should always be more important than than things, you know?
You would think.
Yes. Well, thanks a lot for your call today.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And let's give our next caller a chance. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'd like to suggest a flag ceremony for this 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
What would be nice would be to take and start with the American flag flying high, and then start reading parts of the Patriot Act. And as each part of the Patriot Act is read, the flag gets lowered, lowered, down to about half-mast. And as more and more is read, the flag continues to be lowered. And then the corporate flag is raised up to the top to fly high. And
I like it.
Everybody can get a corporate flag through the Syracuse Cultural Workers Catalog. And fly that corporate flag high, and then take the corporate flag, bring it down, and burn it.
Well, you know, there's going to be that rally at Pioneer Courthouse Square on the 4th of July starting at 1, and if you could find some kind of a portable flagpole, you could take it down there and do a whole performance of that ceremony. I think that would be awesome.
But we're not finished yet.
Not done yet.
Oh, no. After the corporate flag is burnt, start reading the preamble to the Constitution of the United States and bring the American flag back up high.
I like it.
Nice.
I like it.
Have a happy 4th.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Well, you know, that caller and I have a similar idea. I just want everyone to read the Declaration of Independence.
What a great idea.
And it seems like a patriotic thing, doesn't it?
And the Bill of Rights. I mean, all of it, you know.
No,
read it all again.
Like, read it out loud at your picnic as you're talking to your family and your whatnot. You know, if you have a company that, you know, has a little get-together around this time of year, this is like the time of year that people socially picnic in many, many, many communities.
Over the tofu dogs and you know, and potato
salad. So whatever
yes.
your grilling pleasure, check out just the impact of reading, let's say, the first paragraph. It's only 4 lines long. Bear with me. It's the Congress, right? The first Congress passed this. This is why we celebrate the 4th.
That's right. That's why we blow things up.
Yeah, you know, we had the bicentennial. This is the 130th, right? Or 230th.
Yes.
Time flies when you're having fun. I just remember the bicentennial because I was 10, and it was really, really exciting.
I was 23.
And it was really, really exciting, I betcha. Okay, well, I may have been more excited. I had a little Snoopy poster, and there was a Spirit of 76 with Snoopy and Woodstock, and it was like I was very happy. And I was really excited about it because I believed these words. They were everywhere during the bicentennial, and this is the American myth I believed and was really happy to believe. And we need to bring this myth back to consciousness. It is the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of God's and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. First paragraph, second paragraph, a little longer, but still worthwhile. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men, okay, sick, parenthetically, are created equal.
All persons.
And they are endowed by their creator. Let's be specific. It's not about Jehovah. Endowed by their creator, non-specified.
Our creator.
Well, our creator, their creator.
The powers that be,
creator.
Whoever.
Right. I just wanted to point out, it's the non-denominational sort of divine being word
yes.
that was invoked here, and
yes.
for a very specific reason.
Mm-hmm.
With certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Does that mean we don't have to give rights to aliens?
I'm moving on. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their powers, their just powers, from the consent of the governed.
Ooh, that's an important sentence.
Let's try it again, shall we? Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Are we consenting anymore?
Don't think so.
That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to secure, to affect their safety and happiness.
And not only that, but Thomas Jefferson said that it was not just their right, but their duty to do so, to remake the government, to serve the people.
Indeed, that actually goes, if I can continue for a second here. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed.
Prescient, wasn't that?
But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security.
And the things that the British were doing to the American colonies at that time were far less egregious than what's happening to us now.
Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations.
That would be George.
Yes. All having indirect object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. So then there's the list of things to prove this. Let facts be submitted to a candid world. And again, much like Melody had said, nothing you don't see today.
Oh, facts, so, like I said, you know, the situation is much more egregious today in terms of what the government's doing to us than it was then.
I just encourage folks to print out the Declaration mm-hmm. of Independence, because what could be a more, shall we say, patriotic thing to do on
especially
the 4th of July?
If you're going to be joining your friends and family, especially if your family's a little on the conservative side, maybe they like to say grace before they eat, and, you know.
That's exactly what I have in my mind.
Raise your hand and say, me, let me say grace. And you can just sort of read that as, you know, and say amen or whatever.
I want to remind folks why we've gathered today.
Yes, good point. Well, hey,
503-231-8187
is the number. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. We're discussing patriotism and all that sort of thing. And
good morning to you. You're on
yes.
there.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
I've been advised a lot of what Sid had to say.
Uh-huh.
And it was 30-some years ago in the Army that I started quoting the Declaration of Independence.
So about 30 years?
Closer to 36 years ago now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, doing that crazy other work. But at any rate, yeah, nationalism is idolatry. And
mm-hmm.
and the nationalism is idolatry. That up until America, there always was a state religion. And it was only the people, the very radical for the day people who started this country's government that conceived and saw what had happened in the 30 Years' War and in Cromwell's Puritan Revolution that wanted to separate the whole idea of religion from government. But in point of fact, there is this... the way I do it is there's spirituality and there's religion.
Right,
there's
yes.
Then it's more my semantic difference than what a lot of people, because a lot of people define religion a little bit differently and don't understand quite what I'm telling that. But the religion is a political co-optation of spirituality.
I totally agree.
The government needs to get people to believe in it.
Well, and yes, and spirituality and religion are totally different things. Religion has always been, religion in and of itself has always been a means to create and direct power in society.
Yeah.
You know, and spirituality, whether it's individual or whether you do it in groups with other people, is much more personally directed and is not so amenable to being, you know, you're people are not so mean to being manipulated by it, yes.
Because it's more of a direct experience of the divine.
Religion is a social institution claiming that it has a control over the access to spirituality.
Right.
But what's the other one? That the people who do see calling themselves Christians here and now are very much the people that Jesus was dead set against.
Uh-huh.
And that part of what I do when I'm up to it and not doing something else is to go into fairly conservative evangelical churches similar to what I was raised in and just sit there and pretty much quote the Bible and tie people's heads up in knots, and it's really divisive because there's some people that can understand what I'm saying and want to agree with it. And there are other people that just...
they don't want to hear those parts.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, thank you very much for your call this morning.
Yeah. Hi, Steve.
All right, take care.
You know, I'm just really appalled that there's so much assumption in America today that whether it's, you know, about religion or about the flag and patriotism, et cetera, it's either, you know, so many people are declaring it's my way or the highway. You know, like, this is supposed to be a nation of free people. And free people are always going to have a diversity of opinion and practice. And there's just, I think it's really frightening that so many people think that the way to fix America is to have everybody be the same, think the same. That's just a frightening thought to me.
Because that's what a free country's like, dang it.
Really? Huh.
Yep.
That's not what I recall from reading Brave New World in 1984.
No, that's freedom.
Or Animal Farm. Or
freedom. Now, Melody, remember, 1984 told you, freedom is slavery.
You're right. But, you know, we have three more people ready to tell us. We are free. What they think.
Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you guys?
We're good, LJ. How are you?
Oh, fabulous. Thank you very, very much. Okay. Well, yet another wonderful little distraction that the good old USA is throwing up at us so we could avoid talking about the real issues again.
You think?
Well, duh. Duh. Uh-huh. All right. So let's talk about the real issues, okay? Because first of all, you guys are going to be delighted to know that the Congress of the United States voted themselves yet another salary increase.
Oh. Did they vote one for us, too?
Ooh.
But they turned down the minimum wage increase. Now, isn't that interesting?
Yes. Well,
and further gutted welfare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Walmart had a problem with that.
Poor
babe.
You mean their annual profit might be cut to like $6 billion instead of $7.5 billion?
Yeah. Wait, poor things. It gets better. So in the past 10 years, the Congress of the United States voted themselves yet a $32,000 a year increase in the past decade. Most people don't even make 32 grand a year.
Right. Well, you know, I wouldn't have a bit of a problem with that if their raises were indexed to the minimum wage. You know, the minimum wage is far too low. People were saying, oh, some of the Democrats in Congress were saying, oh, we need to raise the minimum wage to $7.50. Mm-hmm. Baloney. Mm-hmm. You can't live on $7.50 an hour. The minimum wage should be at least $10.
Yeah, and these poor guys are having trouble living on $168,000 a year.
Poor things.
I feel so bad for them.
We should take up a collection.
Yes, we should. What we should do is go to the food bank, get boxes for them.
There you go.
And put them in front of the Senate so they could eat.
So finally, they too can experience the joys of cream corn.
And top ramen.
Oh, although, yes. In actuality, it is, it is very expensive to maintain a home in D.C. and a home wherever you are and fly back and forth, especially if you have a big family. But, you know, these people are not hurting. They're making it just fine.
Well, yeah.
And most people are
not. They're fine. They're fine.
And then let's talk about our national disgrace. Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, yes. It's appalling.
Yeah. Did you know that 1 in 10 of the New Orleans refugees are still homeless and they have no permanent place to live?
Well, the other ones aren't because they left. I mean, most mm-hmm. of the businesses in New Orleans that want to reopen can't find anybody to work for them because nobody is there. They all have to leave.
Wait a minute.
I'm saying something else. Yeah.
Okay, good. The Small Business Administration has rejected nearly 70% of the 2.4 million loan applications received from Hurricane Katrina victims.
I'm not surprised.
Way to encourage a rebuilding of community.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that, and let's turn down all the small business loans. Wait, it gets better. FEMA spent $431 million on 11,000 trailers that were never used.
That's right.
$3 million for 4,000 cots that were never used. $10 million to fix up 240 rooms in Alabama, and only 6 people lived there. Carnival Cruise Line got a 6-month deal for $236 million to house evacuees on 3 of its ships, which sat half empty.
Yes, and then they kicked the people out early that
did
stay there.
General Accounting Office, insufficient oversight on 13 construction contracts, including, and I know you guys are going to be shocked, did you know that Bechtel got $100 million to do contract work in New Orleans?
I did, and also Halliburton got a bunch too.
Yes, it did. So, that being said, why don't you guys wrap that up in your American flag and smoke it?
Well, I don't think that would taste very good, LJ. Can I? You can do that. Let us know how it turns out.
I will. I want to see if I can catch a buzz off it.
Ew.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful day.
You too, dear.
Well, you know, I've met a young man recently playing poker who is a refugee from Katrina, and he...
Evacuee.
Well, he says he calls himself a refugee.
Okay, all right. Self-identification problems.
He said that, you know, he doesn't know anyone. He was going to LSU at the time. And he's a young black man. And he said everybody he knows from New Orleans has split and is not going back. They said that they, you know, they're so discouraged not only by Katrina and all the stuff that happened, but just by the unwillingness to rebuild the levees and the Ninth Ward. And they said they're just sick of the racism. They're sick of it. They're just sick of it. They're just going to give up and try to start over somewhere else. And he, you know, he says he's talking about several hundred people that are in his, you know, circle of acquaintance that he's managed to keep in contact with through his mom and all this. And they're all just throwing up their hands and going, heck with this. We're going to go live somewhere else. We give up. It's very sad.
It's tragic. It's tragic. It's genocidal. And that's America.
But just on a little happier note, this ties right in. The little happier note, the Waterfront Blues Festival this year is focusing on musicians and music from New Orleans, sort of a tribute to those people. So, you know, support them as much as you can.
It is co-benefiting both the Oregon Food Bank as well as food in New Orleans.
Yes, so
very important.
Contribute generously.
And I have to say, the musical lineup is incredible this
Spectacular,
year.
Spectacular, yes.
Really, really focusing on New Orleans music.
And if you're like me and prefer to be more of a cave creature than a lobster broiling in the sun, you don't have to go broil. You can just listen to it on KBOO.
That's true, because KBOO will be broadcasting it live starting at noon today. It's noon to 10 for the next 5 days.
Woohoo!
All the blues, Zydeco, and other amazing types of music.
Oh, yes.
You could possibly want.
And I'm personally going to be loving every minute of it.
All right. So, shall we move on?
Yes, indeed.
Good morning to our next caller. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you would like to join us. But this person already has. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you this morning?
Good morning.
Well. I want to get back to your discussion about the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. They are actually somewhat different documents.
Yes,
one
they
is
are. They're totally different
documents.
Yeah.
Which was written by Thomas Jefferson with John Adams and Benjamin Franklin editing. The Constitution is basically a conservative document, small c, not large c. But what bothers me about the Bushes is, while they pay no attention to the DI, which does not have any standing in law, by the way, they grossly violate the spirit and words of the United States Constitution all of the time.
It's like they took a bottle of whiteout to it, you know. Oh,
yeah,
we don't like this part.
I mean, they just want to, you know, throw it out. You know, it's now different conditions. And what I've said for many years, and I used to teach this on a college basis, and I've thought about this, read lots of material on it. The genius of the United States Constitution is that it provides a framework in which to solve problems. It doesn't solve these problems, and it does that with a series of the balances. Now, the horrible thing after the theft of the elections, and it's been now stolen twice, and there's no question about that.
No, there's not.
I mean, anybody who denies that...
is not paying attention.
Absolutely. And so they have, through lots and lots of money, they've also stolen in states as well, so they control all three branches of the government. We've never had that. If the American people were always smart enough to know that they always had a kind of balance between the two parties, and now we don't have that.
Right.
And so it's getting out of hand.
This is a dangerous time. I absolutely agree.
It's a very dangerous time. And now we have the two more quacks on the court. It's hard to call them justices. They're quacks.
Mm-hmm.
They're total sellouts. You know, they're honest. They're honest politicians. They stay bought.
So I do want to say one thing about the justices, and certainly not the new ones. But this week we did see the ruling very recently this week.
Good job, Supremes.
Well, if I can actually let folks know what I was talking about, Melody, the justices did agree that this administration has tried to take on authority it did not have in creating military war crimes trials for Guantanamo Bay detainees. It was a pretty harsh rebuke to the administration yesterday morning because this was actually the third time that the Supreme Court, that a majority of the Supreme Court said, okay, you know, this is enough. This is, you've gone too far now. According to the article from MSNBC, other rulings about Bush's war on terrorism, there were a pair of decisions 2 years ago that placed limits on the president's powers and allowed Guantanamo prisoners to bring lawsuits in U.S. courts. You know, I agree that the Supreme Court turned a blind eye, was actively collusional, was behaving in a manner that scared the bejeebies out of me when they chose to certify the election of Bush to the White House. And I have to say it's a real mixed bag on that court. I really don't trust that court to be very wise.
Well, but the new court's even scarier.
Well, for that court,
yeah.
Being the Supreme Court now, where it is, I do not trust for it to be wise in any kind of ongoing way. But I have to say, credit where credit's due, and yesterday morning there was a decision that was really significant. Really significant. It's one of the biggest, it's one of the rulings on presidential powers, one of the biggest rulings since, like, World War II. And it's important that they do, even if rarely, that they do actually pipe up and say, no, your powers must be constrained. This is dictatorial.
What frightened me is that three of them, well, only Roberts was, he recused himself, he wasn't there. But three of the justices voted in favor of the administration, which is really chilling. The three youngest and most likely to stick around, that's very disturbing. Alito and Scalia and Thomas, of course, we're referring to. But that's, you know, it's going to be an interesting court.
So, anyway, but thanks very much
for your call.
I do agree with you, but you have to watch how the various people vote. And, you know, Bush has got two more years and one more death could flip it again.
Maybe. Oh, totally.
He may not make it that far, but we'll see.
Well, I just hope that the good justices manage to survive these terms.
Yes, may they live to be 110, all of them.
But I do agree with your analysis. That's the same thing I would have said. So thank you very much, and have a good day.
Hey, you too.
All
right, let's go ahead and take another call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about what's really going on in this country and referring to a holiday where everyone likes to be in denial and listen to loud explosions and get drunk and so on and so forth.
I love my country, so I blow things up, as one of my friends once said.
Well, I want to announce another event that's taking place on the 4th, but I also would like to talk a little bit about the discussion so far on the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
You stop short of actually reading what, in my mind, is probably the most shocking aspect of the document, and that is the long list of indictments against King George.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting coincidence there, eh?
Yeah, right.
Especially since our George is related to the royal
exactly
family.
That's what I'm referring to. the long list of indictments, which I have to be honest, was not that up to speed on that part of the Declaration of Independence, but there is a laundry list of indictments against King George that are eerily applicable to what's happening in this country right now. And we are actually, the people who are organizing this event, we've been handing out a flyer, and we call it Read It and Weep. And we reprint the entire Declaration of Independence inside, including these indictments against
King
George.
Nice. Good.
And
people need to read that.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it was an eye-opener for me, and I already was somewhat familiar with the document. But it is very shocking to read these indictments. I'll read just two of them here. They're both very short, just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. In reference to King George, he has made judges dependent upon his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. Chilling, yes?
Yes, and the next one, he has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures.
Yes, I was going to read that one, too.
Yeah, it's funny, because that was the section I was zeroing in on. I was going to get back to it eventually during the show. So, great minds think alike, and that was the section I had highlighted.
So. I think it's like kind of like proof that the universe has a sense of humor, like, hello, people, do you not get it? We even gave this guy the same name. Wake up!
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to highlight some of these travesties on the 4th. A substantial group of people, probably a minimum of 100 and maybe upwards of 400 or 500 people, are going to gather over at the Peace Memorial Park on the east end of the Steel Bridge at 7 p.m. on July 4th. We are going to have some theater. We're going to have some speakers. And Then we're going to march en masse across the bridge and all the way up Front Avenue right into the midst of the flag wavers and the partiers. And we're going to have a legitimate man of the cloth stand up and read a eulogy to the Constitution of the United States.
Ooh, excellent.
So we're handing out flyers for that. I'll just read you the introduction to the flyer. It says, "In loving memory, the U.S. Constitution, September 17, 1787 to September 11, 2001, July 4, 2006, Memorial Procession, 7 p.m., Peace Memorial Park." That's at the east end of the Steel Bridge, North Interstate, and Northeast Oregon Street. It's the new park that was dedicated by the Veterans for Peace, who are also in support of this activity.
Right.
By the convention center.
Yes, exactly.
And, of course, there is a free-form rally at Pioneer Courthouse Square earlier in the day at 1 o'clock.
Right, we're hoping some of those people will actually, after they're done there, will come over and join us for what I think is going to be a very interesting event, because you hear a lot of complaint about speaking to the choir. Well, we're going to take the message to the people who are
good
not
for
the
you.
Choir.
The people waiting to watch the fireworks, you
exactly.
mean.
Exactly.
Excellent. That's an excellent idea.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
And where are you meeting up?
We're meeting at the newly dedicated
Peace Memorial Park,
which is that, I don't know if you've seen it yet, there's a huge planting of flowers in the shape of a peace symbol at the east end of the Steel Bridge, which is the bridge that the MAX train goes over.
And, ooh, peaceniks, look out.
And about what time?
7 p.m.
Thank you so much.
Excellent.
And we will continue probably over at the over on the waterfront until the fireworks start. So there'll be a lot of people. And like I said, we have a legitimate man of the cloth who will stand up. I've already heard his presentation, and he's going to read a eulogy to the Constitution of the United States, which should be quite interesting. He'll be wearing his robes and so on. So
excellent, good
All
job.
Right.
Thank
yeah.
you for organizing that.
Yeah,
it's a great thing. Thanks very much.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be interesting. We're going to have the Statue of Liberty dressed in black, carrying a real torch with flames, which could possibly, you know, be an interesting confrontation once we get across the river. But there's a lot of energy behind it. We're getting word of mouth is spreading. So
I have to say, I just love street theater.
Yeah,
I applaud
I do
street
too,
theater.
And I'm going to be part of it.
It really hits people at a different level. And thank you very much.
That's
all I can say. Thank you so much.
Excellent job. 503-231-8187. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio, talking about the 4th of July, patriotism, what real freedom's all about, etc. So if you want to join us, give us a call.
And let's just say good morning to you. You're on the air.
Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Doing all right. How are you?
I am well, because I am listening to a fabulous show about fabulous things.
Well,
even though it is, I guess it could be positively revolting if you let it be.
Indeed.
We could also be absolutely fabulous, I suppose.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. In any case, I could go on and on about Katrina. Thank you for using the word genocide. That is apt in the setting. But I don't want to go on about Katrina, because I don't. And in fact, what I want to share with you is just three quick quotes, if I may.
Yeah, please.
Theodore Roosevelt wrote, "Americanism means the virtues of courage, honor, justice, truth, sincerity, and hardihood, the things that made America. The things that will destroy America," wrote Thomas Jefferson, "are prosperity at any price, peace at any price, safety first instead of duty first, the love of soft living, and the get-rich-quick theory of life."
Once again, hey, Thomas Jefferson was a pretty smart dude.
I'm sorry, that wasn't Thomas Jefferson. I said Theodore Roosevelt.
Oh, Theodore Roosevelt.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay.
Well, he
and
was
the next
pretty
quote
smart,
comes
too.
From his distant cousin, Eleanor Roosevelt, who wrote, "True patriotism springs from a belief in the dignity of the individual, freedom and equality, not only for Americans, but for all people on earth," said Eleanor Roosevelt.
Excellent.
And my last quote, from a person I've never heard of before, but René Devisne or Devine Williamson, who wrote, "If the American dream is for Americans only, it will remain our dream and never be our destiny." How do you like that?
All right.
I've got to like
it. So there you go for independence. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for
Thank
those
you.
Quotes. Those are awesome.
That was fabulous. So before we go to any more callers, I want to let you all know what's coming up today on KBOO. As you know, starting at noon, it's the Fabulous Blues Festival, but no need to leave before that because you'd miss all this. At 9 today on the Radio Zine, Parafoggering speaks with journalist Sandy Tollin, who wrote the recent L.A. Times op-ed piece called The Incredible Shrinking Palestine. At 9:30, the guest is Rolf Sklar of the Siskiyou Project, talking about the Mike's Gulch timber sale this week in Southern Oregon's roadless forest and the efforts of groups to stop logging there. At 10, Bruce Silverman interviews a Nepali citizen now studying in Portland and a local man who's spent time in Nepal, and they'll discuss the current political situation and media in Nepal. At 10:35, Pear is back with journalist Greg Palast, author of Armed Madhouse. He'll talk about his recent article called Voting Rights Act Nailed to the Cross. I've heard him interviewed about that book. It's going to be great. At 11 on Democracy Now!, guests include Barbara Olshansky, an attorney with the Center for Constitutional Rights, which filed two briefs in the Hamdan case, which we were just discussing before about the Supreme Court, and has represented scores of Guantanamo detainees, and Dr. Stephen Miles, an expert in medical ethics and author of the new book, Oath Betrayed, Torture, Medical Complicity, and the War on Terror. And then, of course, after Democracy Now!, the blues, baby, so stick around.
And also, just to be aware of other issues, The Nation had an article out just earlier this week, The Coming Ballot Meltdown by Andrew Gumbel.
He's been on that story for a long time.
Yeah, he has. Andrew Gumbel is actually, he's the author of Steal This Vote, Dirty Elections and the Rotten History of Democracy in America. He's a U.S. correspondent for The Independent in London, because, of course, all good American investigative journalists have
pretty
to work
much,
for foreign press.
Pretty much. That's pathetic in itself.
Greg
Palast
may talk about that again this morning, as he's had that experience. But the article that Mr. Gumbel has written this week, or has published this week, actually focuses on a specific person, the act of a specific person, and that is our friend Kenneth Blackwell. Ohio's Secretary of State, for folks that might not remember that name. He's the fella that, credited with that, because credit where credit's due, right?
And he's running for governor of Ohio, and he's in the lead currently. That's frightening.
So, Kenneth Blackwell has started sort of getting these enforcements, basically, draconian guidelines on voter registrations and enforcing them under threat of felony prosecution.
Now, that's
against
disgusting.
Grassroots get-out-the-votes activists, especially in left-leaning urban areas. According to the article, this can, his enforcement can come down on you for even the slightest procedural irregularity. Despite denials from Blackwell's office of any malicious political intent, the guidelines have had an immediate chilling effect on groups like the activist community organization ACORN, which has had which has suspended registration efforts pending urgent consultations with lawyers.
And that's, they're a huge threat to democracy, ACORN is. Anybody who tries to register the poor and the melanin-enhanced to vote must be evil, right?
Apparently, according to this article, people who are really working hard on voter education projects, getting out the vote, spreading out democratic empowerment, advancing democracy, are being targeted for harassment, are being threatened, with all kinds of herkinding, otherwise known as felony prosecutions.
Well, Ken Blackwell is like George, it's like Karl Rove
by
Jr.
Blackwell's
or something.
Office.
He's really evil.
So, what can you do? What can you do? I wanted to bring that out there for folks to chew on over this Independence Day. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello,
hi.
Caller.
Hello.
Hi, that's you. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I really only had just one comment for the show. I don't think that you're necessarily doing this, but I think it's a mistake to just condemn the 4th of July celebration outright. I mean, it's...
Actually,
like
I'm encouraging people to attend as many picnics as you can and share information with folks in that spirit of passing on a patriotic, feeling. You know, returning to our roots, looking at this as an opportunity to share with folks your love of the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and all things apple pie-like.
Yes, we're condemning the mindless flag-waving without really thinking about what you're doing.
And we will always condemn jingoism and bigotry.
Right, and that's actually kind of the point that I was trying to make, is that I have a weird, kind of unique perspective on the 4th of July because of the way that I grew up. My parents were, I grew up in the South, and my parents were atheists and also definitely anti-government. I mean, just as far as, like, you know, I don't know, pretty apolitical, but definitely left-leaning. So when we would have the 4th of July, it was like, you know, it was light off fireworks and eat some food and
right.
just kind of, you know, fun times type of thing. So it's like, when I think of the 4th of July, I don't even, you know, really think about patriotism per se. I just think of, like, getting together with friends and having a good time.
The time to barbecue, yes.
Yeah, and then...
And I'm all over any excuse to whip out a barbecue and sit down with some friends and have a good time and to commune, really, literally. It's very cool.
And when I think of, like, the larger, just, you know, mythological aspects of the celebration itself, it's like, if you think about it, well, I mean, I can only really cite one other culture that has a summer celebration. That'd be Mexico, you know, Cinco de Mayo, which is, I know May is not technically summer, but I guess, you know.
Actually, most Mexicans don't celebrate Cinco de Mayo. They celebrate September the 16th, which is, that's to them, that's a more significant holiday. Cinco de Mayo is much more an American invention.
Or Mexican-American.
Yeah.
Actually, many, many countries have celebrations in the summer. There's Bastille Day in France, for example, July 14th.
Right.
But, you know, I think any, you know, gathering and coming together as family, as friends, as community, as neighborhoods, whatever your excuse is, you know, that's cool. Do it. Now, we can't ignore the fact that most folks in this country associate the 4th of July with the Declaration of Independence, with the Founding Fathers, with the fireworks and the rockets' red glare and bombs bursting in air.
The symbolic warfare represented by fireworks.
Given where we are in our history as a nation, I think any excuse, any opening, any way we can spread the dialogue that must happen about where we are at as a country, war crimes, losing a war, not stabilizing a region, a failed foreign policy, which is bankrupting our domestic policy while gutting our constitution, while basically engineering a police state. These are important things to talk about as people are eating some apple pie and looking at those fireworks. The fact that this administration has advanced torture, that must be talked about as we're eating apple pie and enjoying fireworks. You know, these things, you can't really do one without the other and be a person of conscience. But I don't suggest that people not attend those picnics, because in fact, that's the way we commune with each other. That's how we build community and family, and that's important.
I totally agree, and I think one thing that might be interesting to mention to people that you're having a good time with on the 4th of July is, you know, maybe mention the fact that, hey, since you're off work today, all those tax dollars that you're not paying for the hours of work that you're not working today are not going to buy bullets to slaughter some innocent kids over in Iraq.
Well, there's that. It's true.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, thanks very much for your call this morning. We have just over 10 minutes left. We'd love to hear from you. 503-231-8187. If you would like to get in on this conversation, we're looking at Independence Day, codependence as a community, fraudulent elections, political persecution, the oppression of the right to dissent,
etc.
And how do we live in this paradox and continue to eat carrot salad and, you know, the pie of your choice.
You know, while the caller was talking, an old commercial, I don't even remember when it's from, maybe the 70s, the 80s, popped into my head. There was this little jingle, and the words were baseball, hot dogs, apple pie,
and Chevrolet.
And Chevrolet. And I think that's exactly the kind of attitude that makes me creeped out about the 4th of July. That whole thing. The, you know, I love my country, so I blow things up. Let's have symbolic warfare. Woohoo! You know, I mean, I just like this mindless acceptance of, without really thinking, wait a minute, what does baseball and apple pie have to do with Chevrolet? What does symbolic warfare and hot dogs have to do with the Declaration? You know, I mean, really think about this stuff. Don't just mindlessly participate in the rituals without thinking it through. That's all we're saying, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it.
And that said, God knows I've always really enjoyed fireworks.
They, you know, I enjoyed them a lot more before. I lived close in Southeast, and one year, it was like being in Iraq under bombardment.
I remember that year. I also lived there, you know, and yeah, it was a little weird given that we had just, you know, started
like
invading
being in
Iraq.
A war zone.
And, yeah, it was a little weird, but you know, with the right mindset, you can enjoy fireworks.
Bombardment, yes.
Unfortunately, you know, they do pollute like mad, and they do
mess up waterfowl,
and that's sad, and we should probably figure out another way to enjoy sparkly things.
Surely we could make fireworks in 2006 that were a little more...
If we can send them in.
Yes, exactly.
Can't we make an environmentally friendly giant
that
explosive sparkly thing?
That doesn't make those huge
thing.
Booms with, you know...
Well, ponder that, will you? And let me know if you come up with something. Good morning to you, our next caller. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm across the river over in Washougal, but I wanted to ask a basic question about this whole discussion about the Declaration of Independence. What does it have to do with the size of the steak I'm going to slip on the Barbie and the fireworks show I'm going to take in that night? And I think that's the disconnect we have to work for. I'll just relate a simple story. When I was living near a national monument, some years ago in 1976, the National Park Service commissioned a group of actors to come from park to park. And the name of this, and they represented in costume dress and in philosophy, Madison, Jefferson, Ben Franklin, and so on. There were four or five of them. And the name of the presentation was We've Come Back for a Little Look Around. And it was essentially a scorecard. They talked about philosophically what they had in mind when they did the Declaration of Independence. And then they said, what's going on today? It was kind of a look back saying...
Right. How'd it turn out?
Pardon?
How'd it turn out?
It turned out very well. What these actors would do is they would prowl the streets of these little towns near national parks and monuments, and they would collect children and others because they were in period costume. And then they would attract them to a central meeting place where they would talk about these issues, and they would basically give a scorecard. They said, you know, you're really not taking very good care of this democracy that we birthed, and I wonder if something like that might not be beneficial today, because we really are not reaching the hearts and minds of those people that are... think the 4th of July is the size of the steak and the fireworks.
Well, right. For years I've wanted to make a feature-length movie about that, how somehow, I'm not quite sure how, the Founding Fathers would come back to life in modern America and just, you know, what would ensue, how they would, what they would say about
and in
modern
fact,
America.
If I'm not mistaken, you actually haven't even made a Super 8.
I would love to see a movie take place like that where they, you know, of course you would have to concoct some reasonable movie explanation of how they would, you know, magically be reincarnated, but who knows?
Oh, come now.
But I think that would be a very fascinating play or movie because, yeah.
That's the easy part in a film.
Just imagine what, you know, they would be appalled, I think.
Yeah,
truly
they
appalled.
Would. And they would probably call for an immediate insurrection. I mean,
they'd probably start
would.
One.
The interesting thing about it was to watch the faces of the young children in the crowd because they were just mesmerized by it. And those are the people we have to try to get a hold of now.
Yep.
As we see this going to hell in a handbasket.
I totally
indeed,
agree.
Indeed.
Well, actually, you know, I do think that the Declaration of Independence has something to do with the size of the steak or whatever you put on the Barbie because, you know, it has to do with your ability to, you know, to earn your way in this world. And that's being infringed upon, you know, by our current government.
You know, the caller earlier read off a couple of the indictments of why the revolution had to occur that are listed in the Declaration. There are just a couple more I wanted to make sure we got through before we let off. Of course, I think everyone is familiar with for imposing taxes on us without our consent.
Well, I'll let the other next caller come in.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call.
Some good points.
Points well taken. And going on from there, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury.
Well, but that would never happen.
For transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses.
Oh, that's pretty, this is getting better all the time. Please continue.
You know, I've read this since I was, like I said, 10, and that one never really struck me as something we're doing anymore until this year.
Gitmo, anyone?
For depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretending offenses. Yeah, it goes on. For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments.
Wow. Continue.
Well, you know, those are the ones I wanted to just throw out right now. We only have 7 minutes left. I want to get another caller on. But really, I do encourage you. There is this one, I just have to say it. The thing that has always stuck in my craw, as it were, about the Declaration of Independence, and a pretty dang fine document, is the last indictment is over the top, genocidal and racist against Native Americans. And that just shows, unfortunately, mm-hmm. a little of the headspace.
Well, it shows how much
that, Jefferson
that we have
in.
Made some progress in those 230 years.
And so it's not like I can't, it's like I can get behind this Declaration of Independence like 97.5%.
These people were creatures of their time.
But
and,
of course,
and
I think that also actually has a lesson in it, that we can never be so wrapped up in the fact that we are wise to blind to the fact that maybe we're missing something.
People throughout history have put their pants on one leg at a time, just like we do.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, I just had to throw that in there. But yeah, I think it's important to get this information and raise awareness. And maybe you can come up with really, really good stories throughout this weekend about why this is actually inherently important to the size of your steak. And, you know,
or
the
tofu loaf or whatever.
Size of the firework display and how this is absolutely as relevant as any of the wine coolers you might be enjoying.
Ew.
All right.
Do I have to?
Wild berry. Thank you very much.
Ew, too sweet.
All right. So good morning to you. You're on the air.
I just have one quick comment, and that kind of a rehash of a cartoon I saw somewhere a long time ago about how, you know, we can't have fireworks because they're dangerous. We might blow our fingers off, but we can go out and buy an assault rifle.
Or we can sign up to go to Iraq, too.
Well, I mean, it's just like, you know, they don't want us to hurt our fingers, but assault rifles are cool.
Right.
That's right.
So, you know, there's got to be something
it's
wrong.
It's kind of like, you know, George Carlin always had this routine where he mentioned that, you know, in New York City, it's a $50 fine for spitting on the sidewalk, but throwing up is free.
Well, you know, our last caller was from Washougal, which brings to mind when I was living over there a couple of years ago, the incredibly ironic amusement that I experienced when I saw that there was a fireworks booth that was run by the Washougal Fire Department. Like, you know, think about that one for a while. Yes, don't burn up the town, but, you know, fireworks are dangerous, but we're the fire department and we're selling them. Okay. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense now, does it?
And I think he went away.
He
had a brief point.
3.5 minutes, so perhaps we can squeeze one very quick caller in.
And good morning to you. You're on the air.
I'm back, and I'll make it as quick as possible.
Okay.
Take yourself to Iraq and be an Iraqi. I'm reading from the Declaration of Independence of the United States.
Uh-huh.
And put yourself in Iraq.
All right, I'm there.
As an Iraqi. Here it is. He has plundered you could put this first one in America. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. And here's the key. He is at this time, put George W.
Yeah.
He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries, private armies, to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages and totally unworthy of the head of a civilized nation.
Right on.
George W. Bush, movement armies all across the planet, blah, and private armies.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for your addition.
Again.
Sure.
Well, okay. Boy, howdy.
And Let me see, dear engineer, do we have one last person hanging on for that last minute? No.
Well, I guess we'll just have to
we'll
rant for the next two minutes and 10 seconds, huh?
Well, you know, oftentimes wrapping up does leave it a little less jarring than the ever-popular, you've got 30 seconds and now we got to go. So, you know,
the vagaries
again,
of talk radio.
I do have to say that I personally am really looking forward to being with others throughout this weekend. Because I will be at the Blues Festival quite a lot.
I'm going to be stuck at my keyboard working.
I will be making sure that folks do reflect on. It's kind of like I feel like I'm getting religion. It's kind of like, you know, when we get close to Christmas and you see all the little signs that says Jesus is the reason for the season. I kind of want to do that with the Declaration of Independence. I kind of want to give everyone their personal coffee.
Are you going to dress as the Statue of Liberty?
I don't know what I'm going to do. Theater is really appealing to me.
And you should.
One thing is, it's like the onda, right? The general atmospheric vibe. Because I've been feeling really pulled to street theater like I haven't been in a while.
You can paint yourself
blue.
And
just hearing that there are several others within our listening audience that are also feeling pulled to street theater this week, that pleases me. I think that's good, and it's something that we could look at and grow on.
Well, you know, street theater at the Blues Festival would be a great thing.
Well, and really street theater wherever you are, making sure that, be respectful. Because you can always turn hearts and minds much easier by being respectful than you can in other manners.
Respect and gentle humor is the way to capture people's hearts, not shouting and slogan,
Yeah,
sloganeering.
It that just tends to make everyone stop listening. I just have to say, jingoism is unbecoming in any movement. So, speak to people and enjoy yourselves, and remember what it means to truly be a patriot. Remember what it means to protect the right of political dissent.
Or perhaps you'd like to be a matriot, which is my personal choice.
There's that.
You know, I love this land. I love these people. I don't love the fatherland, but I do love the mother of all of us. So,
indeed,
you know,
indeed.
That's important to know.
And so in whatever you do, continue to be positively revolting. Melody will see you in a week. I will take yet another week off, and I will see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
And it's 9:00. You're listening to KBOO Portland. You're listening to the Friday Morning Radio Zine. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Per Fagering speaks with journalist Sandy Tolan, who wrote the recent Los Angeles Times op-ed piece, The Incredible Shrinking Palestine. At 9:30, the guest is Rolf Sklar of the Siskiyou Project, talking about the Mike's Gulch timber sale this week in southern Oregon's roadless forest and the efforts of groups to stop logging there. At 10, Bruce Silverman interviews a Nepali citizen now studying in Portland and a local man who has spent time in Nepal. They'll discuss the current political situation and media in Nepal. At 10:35, Per is back with journalist Greg Palast, author of Armed Madhouse. He'll talk about his recent article called Voting Rights Act Nailed to the Cross. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, guests include Barbara Olshansky, an attorney with the Center for Constitutional Rights, which filed 2 briefs in the Hamdan case and has represented scores of Guantanamo detainees, and Dr. Stephen Miles, an expert in medical ethics and author of the new book, Oath Betrayed, Torture, Medical Complicity, and the War on Terror.